And now it's time for the Scrub Brothers Show. We're putting the body back together. Listen in and learn how amazing the human body is. Learn in a way that's a bit irreverent and thought-provoking. And now it's time to check in for your appointment with the Scrub Brothers.
Dr. Irreverent reports to Operating Room 1. Dr. Irreverent.
Yes, yes, yes. I be here.
Mike Beckham, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, John. Glad to be here. Beautiful, beautiful day in Phoenix, Arizona, for sure.
37 years in dentistry?
37 years in dentistry.
Holy cow.
And I remember back, John, when you were just a little guy. What are you, like 33 years in medicine day?
Actually, I don't remember. 31.
Is it 31?
31 yeah. years. And actually, I was just chatting with you, and I remember going to the dentist, Dr. Sisson, when I was like a young kid in Oak Park. I swear to God, he had a foot drill.
Oh, a pump. He had a
pump drill. And my parents would say, until I was 16, I never got anesthetic for cavities.
Yeah.
And my parents would say, oh, it's a high-speed drill. It doesn't hurt. And I felt like Dustin Hoffman in Marathon Man.
No, it's those things, those old drills. I mean, when dentistry.
It's like Dr. Mengele.
I mean, seriously, you think about doing that. To get ahead of ourselves a little bit, but my mom, when she came to dental school, God bless her, was one of my patients. And when we started, did her exam, all that kind of stuff. So we started doing some work. So I said, Mom, we're going to get started in a minute. She goes, okay, let me get ready. And she grabbed the chair, leaned her head back, and had her mouth open and looked like somebody had just sliced her arm off. I tapped her on the head. I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, I'm getting ready. I said, for what? And so I said, we're going to numb it up. We're going to do this. And she goes, you're going to numb it up. Well, they had a guy named, literally, his name was Dr. Wonder in Marshalltown, Iowa. And then he had the good old belt drive. And you know, if your hamster wasn't in good shape that day, that thing was going slow and it got the smoke going. I mean, the heat generated by those old drills just to get through the enamel had to be unbelievable.
Well, I'm telling you, until I went to you, now this sounds like, you know, I'm giving you a plug, but until I went to you, I did not know you could have a painless dentist. I mean, you literally... Terrible. You've taught me a lot, but I'm telling you, you're painless.
Well, I sure hope so, and sure try and be. And as Rob and I were talking about earlier, I think that's the biggest charge that you have is when you get people in there, don't hurt them.
Yeah.
Prime directive number one, don't hurt them. And we talk about that in really detail. But yeah, it is funny to see what those poor people like you, but that was a common thing.
Oh, my God.
And the best part about going to Mike's office is that and I told him this earlier, he explains everything he's going to do before, and you feel comfortable. It's a great experience.
Yeah, I've had just some bad stuff. You've done some bad stuff to me. But it's felt good. All right, Mike, what are we talking about?
But at least you understood why, so to speak, you know? So, then, you know, thinking about this, John and I were talking about how just medicine and dentistry have changed so much over our time periods. And when you think about the what's changed in a 30-year time period, it's just pretty amazing. So I thought, you know, dentistry then and now would be kind of a fun topic, and try not to get too windy on this, but let me just start. This is a classic. So I thought I'd just start out using the categories of dentistry. So let's just talk about oral surgery. So when we did oral surgery, especially in dental school, we're going to take out a tooth, let's say. Well, you get that tooth out. The mantra was you make the hole bigger or that tooth smaller, and you get it out, and you get it out as fast as you can. Well, that meant you're probably cutting some gums or you're taking off some bone and all these kind of things to get at the tooth. So, totally different mindset process right now. The last thing we want to do is destroy bone. The last thing we want to do is remove bone. So we will take a lot of time, a lot more time. And we use things called periotomes right now, which sever the ligament around the tooth. And we go to great lengths with these little small micro burrs, the little diamonds. That we can section teeth with. So the idea, why do we care that? Well, our idea now is because when I was in dental school in the 80s, I graduated in 81, there were no such things as implants. So we didn't care because you just took the bone off, got the tooth out, and away you go. Well, now everything we do is to preserve the bone. So that's why take the tooth out. Most times we'll graft that area with a bone grafting material, which was not available in 1981. And put a membrane on that, get that thing to heal up. So we've now got a great base reservoir. So later we can go ahead and come back, put an implant in, and then your mouth is restored back. So the options for treatment now are just amazing. But just a total paradigm shift in mentality on how you really want to treat those kind of things. We talked about this too. University of Illinois was a wonderful place. I mean, it beat the dickens out of me. If you want to have a humbling experience, I'll kind of get into that a little bit. But dental school was tough for me. It really was. From a didactic standpoint, the first year and a half were really tough.
I cannot believe I'm learning this much.
And you're just, like John will attest to, and you're an undergrad, if you put your time in and you can stuff whatever they give you into your brain.
Yeah.
You put your time in. If you don't dick around, don't screw off, you put the time in, you can learn anything you need to. In dental, medical, professional school, that's not happening.
Well, you know, except I would say that's true, except engineering.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I'm looking at, you know, Yvonne's.
Totally different cats, those engineers.
Oh, my God.
No.
Yeah, there's no way I would have survived that in undergrad.
No, engineering is a totally different thing undergrad. I totally agree with you. Those guys are beat up from day one, as the architects are, too, I think, undergrad. But if you're taking your prereqs for medicine and dentistry, you can learn that stuff. I mean, you can stack it in. So you go to dental school, you just can't do it. There's just no way. There's too much stuff. Your day is filled dawn to dusk every day. Then you're supposed to study. Then you're supposed to do this and that. So, and then when they start throwing lab work on you, that's when things kind of actually settle down for me. But that's another day, another story. So our periodontal treatment at University of Illinois was fantastic. We had, I think it was five quadrants of gum surgery we had to do as a junior and 10 as a senior. So gum surgery, what the heck is that? Well, back in the day, the standard was we had to remove the pockets. And the pockets, again, as we explored on an earlier show, the pocket is that area, that reservoir around the tooth between the gum and the bone. And we want to reduce the pocket. So back then, we didn't really have a lot of grafting material we could use. So gum surgery involved opening the gum tissue up, pulling it back, rounding the bone off, and cleaning everything out. And that people hated that, number one. Number two, but that's all we really had. So it did show a lot more tooth. The root surfaces were exposed, but that's the only way we really thought of about removing or reducing the pocket and trying to control the gum disease that's around each tooth. So now what the heck's the difference today? Well, today, if you look at what we do, a lot more scaling and root planing. Scaling and root planing, what's that? Under anesthetic, we use instruments and ultrasonics to get below the gum to clean the infection out of the gum tissue. We can use Arestin, as we've spoken about before, which is an antibiotic we inject into the tissue. We understand the direct link between all the gum disease and all the health issues now, which we never understood, and that was our previous show. You know, we talked about that a lot. But nobody ever had any link. We knew nothing about any link. So the idea was we really didn't care about that, didn't know about that. We figured there's only about 13 kinds of bacteria that infect the mouth, so we're going to do our best to eliminate those pockets. So now there's a LINAP laser, which can regenerate some bone. And the surgeries that were done in those past days, they're really not done anymore because we can control things so much better by seeing people more frequently using the lasers. And there's a treatment called a PPT, a perioprotectre, guy developed. It's just a way or a method that people wear four or five times a day for a few minutes, and they chew into it, and it delivers a medication that kills the bacteria in your mouth. So when you chew into this for four or five times a day, 10 minutes at a time, it squirts this medication underneath your gums, and it literally stops the gum disease, the progression of the gum disease.
Can you take it prophylactically?
No, you can't. It's actually, if you think of it, let's put it in crude terms, it's like a mouth guard in that you wear it and you fill this full of, it looks like Karo syrup. And you put it in there, when you bite into it, it squirts up into the gum, and when it squirts up into the gum, it kills the bacteria in the pocket. So think about things like sterilization now. This is really classic. You're going to love this one. So back in the day in dental school, we didn't wear any masks.
Oh, or gloves.
Or gloves. No. Mask or glove. They had no mask.
And this was right at the start of the AIDS crisis in the mid-80s.
This is exactly before AIDS was invented. And I don't ever remember even hearing about herpes back in that time. That wasn't even a concern.
Yeah, I literally delivered kids barehanded and opened people's chests barehanded when you quote-unquote didn't have time to put gloves on. If you did that today, it would be antithetical.
You'd be out of your mind, wouldn't you?
I'm sure that you'd be drugged before the medical board.
And I remember when they started gloves came in after I was out of dental school. They had us use gloves, well, not really in the oral surgery department taking teeth out, but when we were doing gum surgery, we did use gloves. But that was it. I remember the transition when we were out of practice that we've got to use gloves now. Are you kidding me? I mean, it felt like you had a sock on your hand because we're so used to that fine tactile sensation.
Yeah. I mean, the only time we used gloves was pelvic and rectal exams, and you never put gloves on. It was like even when we were doing cadaver lab. Yeah. Most people didn't wear gloves.
Oh,
and
no.
Your fingers would be formalized for an entire year.
You smelled like formaldehyde.
Yeah, yeah, and your fingers would lose sensation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You think about this. This is classic. So these things, when you start listening to this stuff, it's really
scary.
Scary, let's put funny, because if there's anybody that's going to get some kind of toxic, horrible thing, it's going to be John some later in life. But I'm like, why don't you have it now? Okay, listen to this, folks. Here we go. So you got no gloves. We had no masks. Okay, so that was really before, as John and I said, AIDS was developed, invented, discovered, whatever. And here's the other thing that people didn't really realize at the time. We touched upon the water lines a little bit in a previous show. But the aerosol in dentistry, nobody ever even thought about that. What's that? It means that when I take that high-speed handpiece, and when you're in dental school, you never, ever had an assistant. You know, so you're trying to hold their tongue back, use the drill and the mirror and the vacuum at the same time. It's just, it's a three-ring circus. You can't, it's just nuts. I can't even believe we got stuff done. So anyway, but the aerosol that's blown out of their mouth into the air, they did studies later, which is now, and now they know this huge bacterial blood saliva-filled aerosol is ejected out of their mouth and creates a plume, literally, yeah, in the immediate environment. So you are sitting there, you, me, and those folks, we're inhaling this stuff all the time, including the patients. It's not good for them either. So what's the deal? Well, now we have a thing called an isolite. So we put that in the mouth, and the isolite vacuums everything out so we don't have those aerosol sprays all over the place. And, you know, now what do you do when the patient leaves the room? Oh, dear God, we got every kind of genocide, formaldehyde, yeah, sepsicide, whatever. The sides. But you spray everything. You spray the walls. You spray the counters. You spray everything else. You know, and OSHA's sitting there, and you got to let it sit for so long because it's got to be able to kill this freaking new bacteria from Mars that we just, I mean, every day you turn around, there's some kind of new something that they've discovered, you know? I mean, so anyway. No, but that's true, isn't it? I mean,
it is
every
true.
Year.
It is changes.
Every, yeah. Now, here's the other thing people don't understand. We have to pay OSHA every year, an OSHA evaluator, to make sure she has to come into our office and make sure we're up to speed. Well, back then, nobody even knew about OSHA. That was way before that was even going on.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody even cared. I mean, it was like, oh, but now they come in and they'll go through top to bottom every year. What are you doing right? What are you doing wrong? You should do this. And every year they come in, there's a new something that we have to make sure that we've got a new side of something. Quote, that's
It used to be, if you got blood on you, it was a badge. It was like a badge of honor. There was a kid when I was in medical school who fell into this woman's abdomen during surgery face first. And that was because he passed out. And that was considered probably, you know, a faux pas. But short of passing out into the woman's abdomen, pretty much it was all bets were off.
Blood, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just crazy how the whole thing just changed. It was nuts. So I was thinking about this. It's so funny, too, when you think about people complain about this and that in dentistry, and they always complain about a sunny day as well. But back in the day, impression material took 20 minutes to set. 20 minutes. And it was hydrophobic. So that means if you got blood in the mouth and saliva and anything around the tooth, that impression material is not going to take. So here's the deal. I'm going to dental school, right? And I got to get home. It takes me about an hour and a half.
Say an hour.
Easy, because I had to take the train to Jackson and then get off and walk. So, and I got to hit the train right, because if I miss that train,
it's an hour.
Now I'm sitting there. Now it's 7. Now I'm getting home at 8:30. It's not going to work, you know. And then I'll probably sleep through my stop and end up, you know. You would sit there and you'd be taking your impressions, and you know it's 20 minutes, and I'm looking at the clock and you're like, oh, please flip. Because if that impression didn't sit, you think how much time you're wasting for your patient? Let's say you got to take it again, which you usually reline something if you had any blood or spit. That's 40 minutes for those people to sit in the chair with that impression material in the mouth. 40 minutes alone. Now it's 4. So, and we have wands and things like that that take virtual impressions and things like that today as well. So, but this is another one, John. I'm sitting here laughing. So back in the day, we had amalgam. It was silver filling. In school, that's 90% of what we did was silver fillings, man, you know? Right, silver fillings, boy. So what is a silver filling? Well, so it's silver, copper, tin, and mercury. So in today's world, if the janitor drops a thermometer in the cafeteria, they clean it out and have hazmat come. I mean, there's a guy that comes in that looks like Bill Murray in the bottom of the pool.
Yeah,
in
Caddyshack, literally.
And they scrape the whole thing. Oh, my God, you know?
It's a baby Ruth.
Yeah, it's a baby Ruth. So you figure we had 130 kids in our class. So those are 130 operatories, right? Now, we had 2 floors, so multiply that, okay? So now everybody had their own little triturator. A triturator was a thing that spun really fast, and that mixed the amalgam up. It mixed the powder with the silver. So you mix it up, bring it back to your little cubby hole where you're working on your patient. Now, you have a jar in the back of you. It's filled with water. So you take And there's another jar that's for the amalgam. So you had cheesecloth. Again, you're not using gloves. And you take the amalgam in your cheesecloth. You walk over to your mercury jar. You squeeze it. And then all the excess mercury would fall out into this jar. And then you would take the put your amalgam in your patient's mouth, pack it. Then you put the cap back on your mercury jar. And then you would go ahead and go on your way. You know, think about that today. That versus dropping a thermometer in a grade school. I mean, so I'm thinking every one of us with no gloves is squirting that mercury through their cheesecloth every day, all through dental school. So then you think about composites. Today we never use mercury. In fact, we didn't even take amalgam on our dental mission that we did to the Dominican Republic. We took composite because we were just concerned about the health risks. And that's a whole different topic about should you take out silver fillings or not. We'll get to that one of these days. But back in the day, there was composite is what we use now, which is the white materials. And in the day, we had composite. They were just kind of coming out, but they were self-set. So you'd have to sit there, squirt it in the tooth, and then hold it for 5 minutes and then hope that it set. And then you tend to take a peek and hope that it was set, and if there was a void, you had to tear it. It was just awful. So now what do we have? Well, you put the composite in there, and it's not even – a lot of these things we use now aren't even composites. They're hybrid materials that are just unbelievably strong, and they set in 10 seconds. So we hit them with a light.
Yeah, the light.
A UV light. And Zaps it, done, set, game, set, match, over, trim it right away, and you're done. So you think of the speed with what we're doing right now is way more. And the dental materials right now, as far as filling materials, they're really coming into their own, and it's called I'm trying to think of the name right now. But they are bioactive filling materials. And what that means is that they're releasing chemicals that can, for chemicals is probably not a great word, chemistry, that can remineralize a tooth, make it harder around a filling, and also low doses of fluoride, which we know are bacteriostatic and kill the bacteria in the mouth. So we're making filling materials now that are really actively preventing reoccurrence of decay around the teeth themselves.
That's crazy. Got it.
Isn't it wild? So,
and it's all chemistry.
It is. It's just amazing how this whole thing has worked. So you just start thinking about, oh, my God, you imagine what we used to do. I can't even believe it.
No, it's.
And so, you know, back in the day, we did all our own castings. We did, you know, we did all our own porcelain work. Kids don't do that today because it's a CAD-CAM world, and they live in this CAD-CAM world that we never even knew, imagine even whatever exists. So we did all our own lab work. We did all our own waxings, all our own castings, all our own porcelain, all those kind of things. Kids nowadays, they don't do any of that stuff. So anyway, I thought that was that, and there's another material we use a lot now. It's called a glass ionomer cement, which they even believe, there are studies that show that epithelium can even grow to it. So why? Who cares? Well, if you got a cavity below the gum, you want something that's going to set in the presence of blood, release fluoride, so you're not going to have a reoccurrence of decay, and it's just a fantastic material. And if a gum tissue can grow around it and not be irritated by it, it's unbelievable stuff. So a couple more things real fast. X-rays. Now, John, you're going to know more about this than I did, but as far as I can tell, the Kodak family, you know, the boat came and left and they totally missed it because back in the day, we took x-rays. First day of dental school, I've never been in the military, but I can only envision because everybody lines up, get your time, and you went in and you had your x-rays taken by the dental assistants. And there was like four of them in the dental school that used to run around and do stuff. Well, that's their shot to get at you. And you know those old, we were talking about that, Rob, the old razor blade films that you used to put in. And you're sitting there, and then you got to go over it, and then you had to take those things out
and develop them.
And then that's a 20-minute gig. You know, if you had high-speed film that was 10 minutes, then you have to mount them. And then if you have one that's not right, then you have to go back and retake it. And the doses of radiation back in the day, it was much crazy. When they developed fast film, we thought, whoa, now the radiation dose is way low. Well, now what do? We have x-ray sensors. It's all computer-generated and driven, so instantly the x-ray that we take is up on the board. Instantly. The second it's taken, it's on the board. There's no developing. There's no chemicals. There's none of that stuff.
Oh, my God, I remember that.
And we can sit there, and we can enhance, magnify, and change the image. So instead of taking another x-ray, we're looking, and we're spinning it upside down, around, backwards. We're changing the contrast, changing the color, and you can see things now that you'd never be able to see.
Yeah, before. That changed everything for me when you could blow up somebody's carpal bone in their hand and say, like, oh, look at there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never have seen that.
Otherwise, you could never see it before. Yeah, it was pretty amazing stuff. So
is that where we bite down on the thing and it spins around us?
The one that spins around you, that's a Panorex of a type. So that's actually what we do now to take a full set of x-rays versus the individual little films. So that saves tons of time as well. But I think that I thought that was just really funny too. And you know, again, you think about starting your office, as we've reflected on before. You know, high tech. I was a high tech office when I started. And that means I had an extension cord. You know, and of course the beautiful. You know, yeah, I'll go for this $1.75. Yeah, I'll spring for that, man. We're high tech, buddy. You know. And then, of course, you know, when you started your office back in the day, there was no computer. And you say back in the day, that's not long, long ago. Everybody had a pegboard. Nobody had a computer. Right. Nobody ever had a computer in their office. So I thought that was kind of funny. And the last little thing I wanted to touch on, and just to give people a little taste of what's going on in the laboratories for you right now, the best thing we could do when we got out of dental school, gold was still the standard of care. I mean, if you had back teeth, gold is, it was and still is a fantastic material. But and then we had stacked porcelain, which meant you had a metal undercarriage. So you painted the porcelain on top of the metal, and then that's what you—that was your crown. And then you tried to get as close as you could, and sometimes you could stain it, sometimes you couldn't. Well, now, in this CAD/CAM world, the virtual reality world, as I like to call it, let's say we take an impression. The lab wands that, inputs that into their computer, and the artist, these kids now are still artists, but they're really techies that run these dental labs, a lot of them. So the artist, he'll design that on the computer system, punches a button, it shoots over and it mills out the crown.
Yeah, 3D printer.
Out of it. It looks like a hockey puck.
Yeah.
So you have, it's just absolutely unbelievable to see this stuff come out.
And
here's the thing.
It fits perfectly.
It fits absolutely perfectly. And it's a material called zirconia, which is the way, you know, the stuff you make fake diamond rings out of. It's zirconia. And how they've done this, I don't know. But we do, everything right now we do is zirconia or aesthetic zirconia blend, because it is hard. You cannot break this stuff. You just can't. And it wears like iron, good to the gum tissue. You don't have that black line that people used to have when they smiled and all those kind of wonderful things. So anyway, that's a little stroll down memory lane, John.
Cool, Mike. I mean, it is amazing how long we've been in the game and how different it is today than it was not even that long ago.
Oh, no, it's just crazy. Yeah. The big thing in the 60s when that whole thing happened was, as you referenced before, that belt drive, everybody's recollection, oh, smoke, burn, smell, terrible, you know. And then high-speed dentistry came in when the guy invented the air handpiece. And that was huge, because that high-speed air turbine-driven speed went up, and they could get through the enamel faster, and it did create less pain, and things went, yeah, I know. And John's sitting there cringing in his chair.
I still remember.
But, you know, that's why everybody relates to dental, you know, pain. And hopefully we're phasing that out of people's lives. But
no, you definitely have.
But, yeah.
You ready for the question?
I'd love a question.
No, this is a question. This is serious, Mike.
I am. I'm very serious.
All right, sit down.
I am.
Okay. Oh, you are. Okay, never mind. Okay, so this is from Chris from Minneapolis.
Okay, great.
Chris says she apparently, you know, this is sad and a little disgusting, I suppose. But Chris says, I brush my teeth 2 times per day. Why do I still have bad breath?
Well, Chris, you know, that's a sad thing, to be honest with you. I think you need to spend a little more time at the sink. But
I digress. You should not insult the people giving. Chris, yes, is kidding.
Chris, he's, we're just kidding. Just kidding, Chris. So here's why. Here's why. If you look at, people say this, and again, we had this fellow. He stands out because his chief complaint was, my breath's bad and I brush my teeth all the time. First of all, here's number one. He was missing, and I'm using him as a reference point to answer the question. So he was still missing that area around right where the gum tissue was. He's brushing his teeth, but he's totally missing the part that's important, which is the plaque. Now, Rob had mentioned before, boy, if you get in there, you haven't flossed something in a while, you floss it and you smell that floss, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit of plaque can cause a ton of odor in your mouth, because the bacteria releases sulfur compounds, and those sulfur compounds are really, really what smell. The big thing, we want to make sure that they floss, brush really well, use the rotary brushes if you can. Water pick used correctly is fantastic, because it will flush everything out of that gum tissue. And the pockets, if you do have gum disease, no matter what you do, if you have pockets that are sitting there, they're all reservoirs for bacteria. So your breath's still going to smell if you don't get somebody, quote, professionally to help you with keeping those things clean and disinfecting those.
So Chris, get out the water pick. Is that your take-home message?
Chris needs to get out the water pick. The other thing that causes some of this, of course, foods, you know. I mean, I got a little Italian friend, and she comes in, and I say, how was the garlic last night? Oh, do I smell like garlic? Are you out of your mind? Yes, you smell like garlic, you know. And garlic is the worst offender, because it stays with you forever and a day.
Yeah.
And then acid reflux causes a lot of oral odor, so to speak. A lot of people have acid reflux. And the other thing is, use that tongue scraper. Get those tongue papilla clean, clear, and your breath will smell minty fresh.
Mike, look at my tongue.
It's a beautiful
tongue.
What do
Striking.
I think he's
like Gene Simmons.
I think he's genetically engineered to be perfect.
Thank you.
There's a metallic object hovering over the side of the building over here.
I have a quick question before. You've mentioned this several times. You said water pick, and you always end it if it's used properly.
Yeah, thanks.
How can you use it wrong? It's squirting water.
Yeah.
How is it used wrong?
Great question, Rob.
Totally. No, that is a good question. And I'll tell you this going back to the twit contest again, because people, I'll say, you're using your water pick, and they're like, oh, I can't stand using that thing. It's like, why? Well, I get water all over the mirror. I'm thinking, what are you doing, for God's sake? It's really easy. I mean, you put it in, I put it on the sink. Here's how you do it correctly. You want to turn it down low. People usually think, oh, I got to turn it up high.
Like Selma, Alabama. Yeah. Civil rights movement.
Yeah. You got to turn it down low because you want it to irrigate, because if you turn it high, it'll literally cut the ligament around the teeth. And I've had people come in, they say they got a sore, not an abscess, but an inflamed area. And I start asking them questions, and inevitably it'll be, I got my water pick on 7 out of 10. I'm like, put it on 3 because you want it to flush it out. The other thing is you want to use a rubber tip in there. There's a whole bunch of tips that usually come with a good water pick system. Use the rubber tip because you can flush down at a 90 or a 45 degree angle into the gum, and that rubber tip will get in there and just flush everything out. You just want to flush it out and flush it out and flush it out.
I'm going to go buy a water pick.
They're great. I'm telling you, they really are.
Yeah.
I mean, people say there's a controversy. I'm like, oh God, there's not a controversy about that. It works great. If you keep your pockets clean, and that's the only way you can flush out a pocket, it's a water pick.
Amen.
Brother. So yeah. I hope Chris's social life picks up, John.
I don't know Chris, but I suspect that's going to be an issue. Anyway, funny story. No, it's your funny story.
Oh, it's my funny story. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, here's kind of went on this a little bit. So strolling down memory lane, as I was doing here a minute ago, I thought this is kind of a apropos, and John will relate to this. So you go, how did you get into dental school? So here's what happened. So Dad was the one that encouraged me. My dad did, And I said, geez, Dad, I just don't like school. I mean, school is not my gig. I got about half my buddies are plumbers, electricians, in the trade schools in Chicago. And so Dad was always like, I get that whole thing. But if you go to school, you can run your own company, electrician or plumber someday. So, and he introduced me to some people at U of University of Illinois in dental school. And I thought, this could be a good thing. I really like the attitude, like the environment, that kind of thing. So a little bit of an artsy bend to the things that I like. So anyway, there's a thing called a dental aptitude test. So it's a DAT for short. So Dad, at University of Illinois, of course, he says, Mike, you need to take the DAT. And I'm like, Dad, I haven't even taken the basic requirements. He's like, well, you can take it 3 times, take the DAT. I'm like, okay, I take the DAT, the dental aptitude test. I get my scores back. You ready for this? It was like 0 to 9. 4-5, 4-5, 4-5, 4-5. One class I hadn't even take. I took a semester of inorganic chemistry when I took this one. 4-5, 4-5. I mean, that's reading comprehension. Who invented liquid soap?
Is the 4-5 good?
They're horrible. They're like the middle class scores that you can get. I mean, 9 is excellent. If you get above a 5, you're doing well. Okay, so I'm sitting here and I got my first semester of organic chemistry out of the way. Dad says, well, you need to take the DAT again at Christmas time. And I'm like, Dad, I haven't even taken organic chemistry. He goes, don't worry, you got another chance after this. I'm thinking, oh my God, I blow this one. I'm in trouble. So now to fill in the gaps on this, that summer between that sophomore year, I went ahead before I took organic chemistry. I said, okay, I'm going to work at this. I'm going to do everything I can. My brother's a freaking math genius, and he almost killed me because I still don't understand how the freaking boxcars get to California at different times. I can't understand. And Dave would look at me like, after a while, like in his eyes with his brotherly love, I read, you are the dumbest piece of horse meat I've ever seen in my life. But so he tried and tried. Dave tried and tutored me on the math stuff, and I was like, oh God, I'm just sweating. And then I get out and do this Evelyn Wood speed reading thing because I need to increase my reading comprehension. So I worked my tail off on this thing all summer. And we're doing the factory stuff too. So you're doing this when you're off work and all this kind of thing. So here we go. I got a semester of organic chemistry out of the way, only a semester. So I had Professor Kelly at University of Arizona, who was absolutely loved him to death. Head of the department, little hippie dude, had a ponytail, wonderful, fantastic teacher, couldn't be better. He would always say, and if you were going to be taking a professional test anytime in the future, this is a question that I would think would be asked on these tests. So I get a semester done. Dad's driving me in to take the dental aptitude test. I'm feeling really like, oh, this is not a good thing. So I crack open the test. Here we go. I'm doing my best on, you know, the mouse eats the cheese here, this goes there, these, you know, the questions that they ask you, which are just so bizarre. So I get to the last part, which is organic chemistry. And I open I open up the pack, and I looked at it, and I went, oh, my flipping God. I went ding, 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 like a freaking idiot savant, threw my pencil down, and I walked out of that place. I was like the first one done. That test in organic chemistry was almost 98% of my final at University of Arizona. Not the exact questions, but the exact topics, i.e., Kelly hit everything that I needed to know, basically, in that first semester. So I walk out of there. Now, think about all the work I did. Evelyn Wood, Dave's tutoring me, all this kind of stuff, get my scores back. Here we go.
4-5, 4-5, 4-5, 4-5, 4-5, 4-5, 4-5, 7.
Bing. Cha-ching. I get into school. All because Dr. Kelly at U of A did me right.
Nice.
So that is the story. That is
it. Isn't it funny how close, that's the way I was too. Isn't it funny how close you could have come to not actually be there?
Oh, I'm telling you.
And the rest of your life would be different.
I could never, I mean, listen, there's not.
Be like me.
I couldn't have done any better on any of those things. Yeah. I literally could not. I mean, that 4 or 5, that was it, man.
And look at you now.
I shudder to think. I can't even, you know.
Well, Mike.
So thank you for listening to my stories and sharing with you the days of yesteryear. Hi-ho, Silver.
Folks, have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week.
You
Mike,
bet.
Thanks.
Great story. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to The Scrub Brothers Show. Every week, putting the body back together right here. Listen live or on demand 24/7. Join us next week for your appointment with The Scrub Brothers.